Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to Girl on the Gov, the podcast,
where we're shooting the shit with elected officials and candidates running for office to get to know the person beyond the politics.
Because politicians needed a rebrand.
Guys, I may pee my pants on this intro because Madison and I are zooming through from recording to recording. Back to back.
I'm sorry. We have to bring up what happened today in the Senate. Republicans voting no on our basic right to contraception.
What a treat.
Another Wednesday in America, you know, just basic things like condoms and the pill. We can't even get that right secured.
Insane. Nuts. The irony is this morning I was at my gyno and liberal gyno, obviously.
Timely.
Yeah. And we were literally talking about it. He was like, don't give up the fight. Don't let us lose the right to contraception and abortion. I was like, I gotcha, gyno. Captain. But no, we all knew this was going to happen, that they were the point of Schumer doing this was to show that the Republicans are trying to ban birth control, contraceptives, et cetera, yeah, and to put them on the record as doing so, especially in an election year. So there was a point and a purpose, and we already knew what the outcome was, but they proved the point, and they didn't have to. They could have been
It was honestly good that the two female Republican senators were like, yeah, we're going to vote yes on this. It shouldn't be a partisan issue. It's just fucking crazy. But it's to show who they are and what they want to do. Yeah. And especially what they want to do, what Republicans want to do at the state level across the country with some of these more extreme state legislatures that we see. So just tell your friends, seriously, and call your Republican senators and ask them why they voted no on your basic right to birth control. And that includes you, men. Don't forget. Not that we have literally any straight men listening to this show, but
we actually
if
do.
In case.
And they're all 45.
Hey.
Hi, guys.
Hey. Yeah, that goes for you too, then.
Yeah, exactly. We may have some more. I posted a TikTok about Trump's little conviction moment, and it really brought all the 45-year-old men to the yard. It started with the 45-year-old men in support, which, again, go call your senator right now. Maybe send a little email. It happens to be, there actually is an easy email form to use linked in this week's GovHub newsletter atop the action items. Go get them. And then the TikTok did move itself to the Trump side of TikTok. So I'm now ignoring the comments, but they are so wild. So, but it's all middle-aged men. I'm like, how did I? And the top of the video, literally the search bar is Donald Trump. So
that's, yeah, our TikTok, I'm sure, just us now getting fueled by the 45 white straight trolls. But I don't know that they listen to the show.
No, I don't. Yeah. I don't think they're popping.
But for the folks who do listen to the show, tell the men in your life, tell the women in your life, tell the everyone in your life, because Jesus Christ, this is so basic. What's going on?
The dudes should be, this is a conversation topic. Obviously we've been contending with this issue for the last few years, but I feel like this had a moment and then kind of went to the wayside, but it's what woman wants to hook up with a guy in this environment? Risk of literally being obviously sex is fun, sex is great, sex is awesome, right? But there are obviously a ton of risks with that, from obviously STDs, but also to getting pregnant or any of, on purpose or not. And it's why would you ever be I'm going to risk it for this loser who is not a dude with a trust fund, 6'5" blue eyes? I'm just saying.
Literally, it's a good point. It's valid. It's good. It's right. Yeah, no, it's just, it's so interesting. Boys, there's so much to unpack from it. It's a coordinated effort to, by the Heritage Foundation, to bring back the consequences of sex and ultimately gain control over women. It's terrifying. And, you know, first abortion, obviously, then IVF, now birth control. It's happening and we have to fight back. There's so much at stake. So
yeah.
Just don't sleep. Don't fall asleep on this shit because it's still happening and it's still real and it's still terrifying. So
totally.
And but there's a lot like, we can do.
Exactly. And it includes voting this year. And I know that a lot of mm-hmm. people are like, have their issues with who's on the ballot. I totally get it. Like, do we really want like two old dudes like racking the top of the ballot? Like, no. Like, ideally, no, but that's the choice. We have to make adult choices. And your choice is to have the ability to have some control of your body, pending what state you're in, or none. So let's just be so fucking for real. Like, that's what's on the line amongst so many other things that literally are like, hey, are we going to have a democracy or not?
Mm-hmm.
So I just need everyone to sack up. I know that sounds harsh, but sack up. I know, honestly, only 3% of the show has sacks to sack up, but like,
yeah.
Please do
and
it.
Here's the thing. Whether it's reproductive rights, gun control, foreign spending, wars, whatever it is, like, if you want to be able to protest and have your voice heard about all of those things, there's two options. There's either you can have that option in the future, or you can no longer have that option to use your voice in protest, because Donald Trump has quite literally said and has a laid out plan called Project 2025. Where they are saying National Guard will be deployed on anyone protesting. So thank you very much. Soapbox. Yeah.
There it is. We could go off all the damnness, but we have 3 minutes to our next recording. And so Maddie really tried to squish us in here. We could, like I said.
Honestly, this might be our best intro ever. We just, when the pressure's on, we deliver.
I have so much to yap about. This is just rude because I have two great stories. But anyways, including the fact, wait, hold on, I have one more. I have one just like quick one, which I just.
Okay, we have to get a Samantha story in every intro. Let's hear it.
Gotta be. So today, as I was walking back from this doctor's appointment, right, I texted Maddie this. I literally saw a Stop the Steal upside down motherfucking American flag. I literally did a double take, total twisty, whatever. And this person, I don't know them personally, but you and you like go for walks and like whatever in your neighborhoods and like whatever. And I happen to know this is a Bernie Sanders house. And this Bernie Sanders house is now a Donald Trump house. Same people. Upside down, Stop the Steal flag. I would also, like I said before, I would never make it as a spy because I was so obvious taking the stamp picture. I was trying to zoom in. I look like a dad tourist in like New Balances and khaki shorts, okay? It was bad. But nonetheless, I did see one in the wild and I was shooketh, de-shocketh. Holy moly, guacamole.
Some people just don't know who they are and they're trying to figure it out clearly. Because what? How does like 1 + 1 = fish at that point?
Well, I could go off on that, but we don't have time. We don't have time because Madsen did this to us. So nonetheless, our guest today is our first from a state I can't pronounce. Maddie, can you cue this one in? How do you say the state?
Nevada, Samantha.
I can't say that.
She said Nevada, got called out. Now she's scared.
Which is fine, but we know I can't pronounce anything. Like, so we are
that's
shocked.
True.
No one is shocked.
It's a theme.
I'm trying to put some respect on the name. So nonetheless, our guest today. Oh,
I'm sorry. It's just funny because like Nevada is like the hardest way to pronounce it. It's like Nevada is like the whitest way to pronounce it. Nevada, you know? Sorry. Go ahead.
I'm speechless. I don't know what to tell you, okay? Like, it's just, it is what it is. But nonetheless, our guest is State Senator Cannizzaro. She is the Senate Majority Leader there. She is awesome, so much fun, so cool, and such an accomplished, amazing human. So we get into that conversation about how she got here, what all the big political things are on the line in terms of the, you know, the little thing called 2024 and beyond, like what that state looks like politically. Oh my God, we have to go. This is not going to download in time. I love you guys. Toodaloo. Without further ado, here's our guest.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand.
And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, guys, we're back with not only a fresh episode, but a person from a state that we actually have never somehow covered, which is Nevada. Crazy. Crazy. Swing state. So many interesting things happening in politics. And we have, the state Senate majority leader here. So to start things off, how's it going? What's going on in the state of Nevada? Like, give us a little snapshot.
Yeah. So thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here. And this is one thing that you will hear from homegrown Nevadans. And so if you ever come to Nevada, you have to say Nevada, like Nevada.
Samantha, and she's also an East Coaster.
No, lots of people don't know that. And so the one thing is, if you come to the legislature and you say Nevada, they will just 100% correct you on the record. So that's my little fun Nevada tidbit. But Nevada is an amazing place, and you should definitely come to visit. You should definitely look at what we're doing here, because I think we're just in a really exciting time. We have in the state legislature, which I am very proud to lead in the Senate chamber, the first in the nation female majority legislature. So we have more women serving in the Nevada legislature than we do men, which is super exciting. And I think that happened for the first time in 2019. And over the course of, those last few sessions, we have had so many women step up to run for office, which is amazing. And I think really illustrates and speaks to, when you have representation that looks like you, you feel like, oh, that's a place I belong. And I think that we've been able to make a lot of good policy choices around that. And Nevada is a cool place to come. I tell people, and this is my little tidbit, because I grew up in Las Vegas, which, as a kid, people always were like, what hotel do you live in? And we didn't live in a hotel. We lived in a house, a regular house. We did regular things, go to the movies and the mall and all those, typical teenage things. But people think of Nevada, they think of the Strip. And the Strip's awesome and amazing and a great place to come and visit. But in Nevada, we have amazing outdoor recreation, both in Southern Nevada and Northern Nevada. We have Lake Tahoe up in just outside of Reno, which is where I went to school for college. And we just have a very robust and interesting rural landscape, in addition to the big city of Las Vegas. So I think we have a lot to offer, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to say a majority female legislature, that just is so refreshing to hear, and just have to shout that out, because just gives me hope. But also back to the Nevada of it all, I was going to ask where you're from, but I love that you're from all over the state. I'm in California, so I go to Tahoe all the time.
Yes.
Winter, I'm on the west side, but the east side of the lake is truly my favorite place, maybe on earth. It's so beautiful. So I'm jealous you got to go to school there. That's amazing.
That was the thing. I went to college up in Reno, and then the trick was you had to organize your schedule so that you could find lake days when it was warmer.
Yeah.
And then ski days when it was colder. That was the thing. And then they had a lot of great pass deals for students to go up, and if you snowboard or ski or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember,
do you snowboard or ski?
I don't know if what I would call what I did was snowboarding exactly, as much as it was falling down a mountain.
Yes.
But I did try to do that, not so gracefully, I will say. But I used to go up with friends when I could, and borrowed equipment from some of my girlfriends, and we would go and, spend the day doing that. And then
which mountain would you go to usually?
We went to Mount Rose a lot, because they had good deals on passes.
Yeah.
And it was a short drive.
Totally. So fun. Love that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Love hearing about the landscape. And this is the thing with this show, is I end up walking with so many recommendations and places to explore. I feel like Maddie too. But one of the things we also have to explore, of course, is what the political landscape looks like. Obviously, we've got some great representation happening in terms of women. But what is the actual culture like in terms of politics? Is it more Democrats, more Republican, purple? Where does it really fall? And what are also those issues that seem to be really top of mind for people?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And it's funny because I think sometimes people look at Nevada, and so we have currently a majority of Democrats in the legislature, in both the Senate and the Assembly. And they'll say, oh, well, then it's a blue state. We're like, oh, well, but we have a Republican governor. And they're like, oh, well, it's a red state. And so Nevada is the kind of the short answer is Nevada is still a very purple state. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, big metropolitan areas, obviously, like, I guess maybe that's not how some folks would describe Reno, but it is like a population base here in the state. So that's up north, like I said, very near Tahoe. And that is one of our bigger areas. And then down in southern Nevada, where like Las Vegas is and Henderson is and the city of North Las Vegas, it's kind of one big valley. So even though we have separate cities between those, it's really just one big metropolitan area. And so, you know, some of our population centers tend to be a little bit more and elect, you know, more Democrats, but that's not necessarily like true across the board. For example, in Washoe County, which is where Reno is, like the Clark County Commission has a fair number. I think they're still a majority Republican body. And so it is an interesting state, I think, for those reasons. And then, you know, we have a lot of rural areas and that tends to be a little bit more conservative. And really, if I was going to describe Nevada, no matter kind of where you are on the spectrum, we have a little bit of a like a libertarian streak. We kind of like to do things our own way. We like our freedoms. We like our independence. And so you'll see that. And I think that also resonates with some of the issues that get to be important with folks. You know, right now, I think in the landscape of what we're seeing across the nation, Nevada is actually in a very unique place when it comes to reproductive rights in some ways. In the 1990s, actually, we put into statute through a ballot initiative, which means that Nevada voters had to go to the polls. They had to vote for it, had to pass by a majority. But in the 1990s, we actually passed a statutory initiative that gives us statutory rights to seek an abortion up to 24 weeks. So we have that as sort of a statutory protection here in Nevada. But you're also seeing, I think, in the backdrop of this election, a lot of people who are stepping up and saying, like, we have to do more. And so we have some initiatives that are moving to enshrine that in our constitution so that it is a constitutional right and not something that can be undone by a legislature or a governor. It would have to be something that the people really wanted. Yeah. And so I think that's a perfect illustration of some of the dynamics here in Nevada, even though we have more conservative pockets, even though we have a Republican governor, we also have a very strong independent streak and people who want to maintain their rights and want to have the choice, especially when it comes to reproductive rights, to be able to just go to their doctor and make those decisions with their family and their doctor and not have a whole bunch of politicians involved. And you see that throughout state government. We have a pretty small budget for as big as our state is now. We don't have a lot of some of the same, I guess, departments and services and different pieces of government that you might see in larger states. And I think that that is very representative of what you tend to see sort of up and down the state. And we refer a lot to it as up and down, like south is Clark County and Las Vegas and then northern Nevada, where like Reno and some of the rural areas are.
Totally. Yeah, that's interesting too. And, you know, we were going to ask more about the ballot measure because it's going to be such a pivotal thing this year. And we're seeing it across the country in certain states with abortion on the ballot like that. I'm curious to kind of learn a little bit more and dive a little bit deeper into like where the electorate in Nevada currently is around this issue. Like you mentioned a little bit, but I'm curious, like, do you think this is going to be a really mobilizing issue for the state, or how do you see it going?
I think, so I guess as just sort of a where Nevada is, we have that statutory initiative. So we have a statutory protection that says you can seek an abortion up to 24 weeks. Beyond that, there are a few protections that are designated within our laws. So I always make the argument that there are still, in the face of losing the protections of Roe versus Wade, and especially in the backdrop of what the holding was in the Dobbs decision, states have a lot of leeway to make all kinds of laws and rules around how and when you can see a doctor, what that means, how those determinations are made, and so on and so forth, that can really impact, you know, a woman's ability to even find a practitioner who's willing to see her for the purposes of her reproductive health, whatever that might be. And so I always say, you know, you can't look at that. And a lot of people will tell you, well, we have it in the Constitution, but that's not true. It's just a statutory initiative. It takes a little bit to be able to overturn that, but there are still a lot of things that a legislature or a governor could do that would impede those rights. And so in the wake of Roe versus Wade being overturned in the Dobbs decision, we did a couple of things during the last, right as soon as that actually that decision came out. We're a very part-time legislature. We only meet for 120 days every other year. So we're only in session in odd numbered years, and it's only for 120 calendar days. So when the legislature is not in session, we don't have the authority to pass anything. So when Dobbs came out, we were not in session. The governor at the time, Governor Steve Sisolak, signed an executive order that said, look, if you're traveling from another state or you're a woman in Nevada and somehow another state is trying to seek jurisdiction to prosecute you, we're not participating. If you're a practitioner who is in Nevada providing legal, you know, standard of meeting the standard of care in terms of reproductive health, whether that's birth control, abortion care, miscarriage management, fertility treatment, whatever it is, we are not going to allow another state to come in and try to prosecute you. And if you are a practitioner, an OBGYN who is providing services in another state, and another state says, hey, we aren't going to let you continue to practice medicine because you are practicing as an OBGYN, and that's against, you know, some of these crazy laws that we've seen where they're trying to dismantle even the ability to like see someone, we will take you here and we will be happy to like get you through the licensing process. We want practitioners to feel safe. We want patients to feel safe while they're here. That was an executive order though. So that last legislative session in 2023, we passed a bill. It was my bill, Senate Bill 131, that put that executive order into statute. And so we passed that and the governor signed it. The other thing that we did was we passed and I sponsored SJR 7, which is a robust constitutional right. And the way that we do that, we put a constitutional right into the Nevada Constitution via the legislature, is to pass it in two consecutive sessions. And then it goes to a vote of the people in the next general election. So what SJR 7 was, is a comprehensive, you shall have the fundamental right to access reproductive care, whether that is IVF, fertility treatment, vasectomy, tubal ligation, birth control, abortion, miscarriage management, anything and everything that would fit under that umbrella, we wanted to make sure that people in Nevada have the right to. And so that passed our legislative session. It'll be coming back to the legislature in 2025. If the legislature passes it again, then it will be on the ballot in 2026. There is also a separate moving piece that's a constitutional right as well. It is an enshrinement of that statutory initiative that says you can seek an abortion up to 24 weeks. That one is being done by a petition of the voters. So it's currently going through the verification process to make sure that they have enough signatures from voters in Nevada, from each of our four congressional seats. If it qualifies, it will be on the ballot this election, and then it has to pass again in 26, and then that would be part of our Constitution. So there are still a lot of protections, and I think they're important.
Totally. Well, that's so interesting too, that there's almost two ways to do a ballot initiative in the state, because like the first one you described is how New York State works. And I was like, oh, wow, this sounds super familiar. I know exactly like how this rolls. But then still the petition process, but the two times passing, I'm curious. I really have no idea. Like, is there a reason that they seem to do this like double down process where it needs to pass twice? Like, is there like a strategic reason that makes sense?
So it's, I believe, and I want to, I'm almost positive that I am correct about this. It's in our Constitution that that's how you would have to be able to go. And I think realistically that is, you know, you don't want something, and this is my own take on it. Like, you wouldn't want something that goes on the ballot. And let's say it's an election where maybe people aren't motivated, or it's a midterm and not a lot of people know about it, or you really want to make sure people kind of understand the issue and are voting for it and knowing like, oh, okay, yeah, this is something that was on the ballot and didn't just happen to pass because there wasn't a lot of people who turned out or what have you. So, I mean, maybe that's the wisdom in it. I think, you know, for our purposes, if something passes twice on the ballot, it's hard to argue that it's not something that Nevadans want. And so I love that as a mechanism for us to be able to get things on the ballot, right? That it really does give people the chance to think about what are we putting in our Constitution, or what are we passing and why, and to give it some, some ability to say, okay, you know, I'm going to look into this and really know what it is we're doing. So I yeah. like it for that reason.
Totally. Yeah. I would be so curious to chat with somebody that for like whatever the ballot initiative was, they voted for it once and then changed their mind to no or vice versa. And just like think about like what they learned in between that swayed them. I feel like that just generally across the board would be so helpful for like all of us, like little like politic and people trying to figure out like how to change somebody's opinion, especially in this day and age. Like, I don't know who wants to sponsor this study. Just like how the tides
turn. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. That's wild. I've never really heard of that, honestly, but I was going to say too, I feel like we could have a whole episode on like part-time legislatures and like the pros and the cons.
Yeah. Totally.
And I was just curious because like, I think one of the pros is that as a part-time legislator, you are kind of like a whole person. Whereas I think if you are full-time, it's like politics is your life, your personality, or that's maybe how you're perceived. So I'm just curious, like who are you outside of session? Yeah. And I just like would love to learn more about like what life is like when you're not politicking.
Yeah, I love that. And I think you're right. Like that is a huge pro. I say we're a citizen legislature. We really are. Mm-hmm. People come from all walks of life. So I don't know, outside of the session, I grew up here in Vegas. My parents were a bartender and a waitress, and they didn't have an education, a high school degree. So I kind of come from this working class family where my parents were like, look, you want to have opportunity, you got to go to school, you got to work hard. My first job was in a restaurant where my mom worked. And so like, that was an interesting experience because she definitely, I remember like very distinctly one day I like sat her a bunch of tables all at once and she came around the corner and was like, Nicole Jeanette. And I was like, oh no, I'm in trouble. And I'm not just in trouble at work because like someone I work with is mad at me. Like I'm in trouble when I get home.
Wow. And so, that's an interesting dynamic for sure.
Yeah. So I worked in the restaurant with my mom for quite a little bit. And then, you know, went to college and I worked at TGI Fridays for a long time. But anyway, that's kind of how I grew up. And I, you know, was like the first person to graduate from college and the first person to get out of high school. And then I went to law school. So I'm a lawyer by trade. I spent, almost 11 years as a prosecutor doing mostly, for the most part of that, my specialty was in the gang unit. So I did a lot of gang prosecutions. And now I'm in private practice. So I do just civil litigation here and there. And then I've got two little boys. One of them is going to be three in in a little less than a month, actually.
Oh my gosh.
He'll be three. So he is hilarious and he thinks he's like so funny and he's just like the sweetest boy.
Aww.
And then I have a one-year-old.
He oh my gosh, so close in age.
So close in age. So he turned on just a couple weeks ago and he's like trying to figure out how to walk and he's very like mom-centered. So if I'm like in the building, he's like, I can smell her. I know she's here. Where is she? Give her to me. And so I spend a lot of my days during the day like doing lawyerly kind of things. And I have been married to my husband for 11 years this year. We've been together for, I don't even know if I can do the math on that, 17 years this year. He's a lawyer too. We met in law school. And so, we like are just trying to grow these two little humans who are very active and they're definitely like in all of my like female leadership and like female majority legislature and empowering women, I have like two very rambunctious boys.
You go home to a bunch of boys.
I go home to like a bunch of boys. And so we spend a lot of time just doing like coloring and arts and crafts with them and like chasing them around the house and like kicking the soccer ball and playing in the pool and trying to like, you know, make sure they eat something other than like licking a cracker one day and then are you gonna live? And he's like, yeah, I'm fine. I like licked a cracker yesterday. It's fine.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
He's like totally in toddler mode.
So wait, are the dogs boys too? Are you like full boy house?
So I have one dog. His name is Reno. He's 13 years old. He's like a pug, beagle, mutt mix that we got from the shelter. Aww. And we went to go get we were like, oh, we're going to go like adopt a dog. And so we go and there's this teeny tiny little like black dog and he's super cute. I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to like touch him. So like, we take him out, you know, they take you to the little,
yeah,
there's a little yard there and you can kind of like see if you and the dog are going to get along. And I remember that I got a call, my dad had called. And so I stepped away real quick and the dog went nuts. And the guy who was there with us was like, from the shelter was like, sometimes you pick the dog, sometimes the dog picks you. And I was like, yeah, okay, we're going to have to take this one home. We went home with two dogs that day, but Reno's still kicking. And aww, then, and he's a boy. And then we have one orange cat, which my three-year-old calls him now Catfield because we watched Garfield. And so now he calls our cat, whose name is Jeff, Catfield.
That's the most perfect cat name I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah. I love that. So obsessed. We have Jeff and Reno. They're both boys. I have my husband. He's a boy. And I have two boys. So I'm the only female thing around here.
I'm so glad you get to go to work and get the opposite experience, especially in politics.
Yes.
I'm very happy about that.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Wait, I have a question because we have a lot of pre-law and law school girly pops that listen to this show.
Love it.
What is like your advice for picking a path, like a specialty, you know, a field that you're going to, you know, go into? Like, what is like your advice for figuring that out?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. I've wanted to be a lawyer forever. I always tell people my mom had a job when I was real little downtown working at this little cafe that was just down the street from the courthouse. And so there were times, so my parents worked opposite shifts, right? So somebody could always like watch the kids and then somebody was working. So there were times where my dad would have to pick me up from school because I'm the oldest of my parents, three, and then drop me with my mom on his way to work. And so she worked lunches, he worked swing shift. And so I'd have to like go in and like sit, and I saw all these lawyers and I was like, these people are so cool. Like, I don't know anybody who like wears a suit, like goes to a cafe like during work hours and they're doing important stuff. And I just really want to be a lawyer. And so I basically just wanted to be a lawyer my entire life. And I'm also somebody who is, I know, surprising to everybody as a lawyer, a little bit type A. So I, you know, had this grand plan, like I'm going to go to law school. I'm going to go to this big fancy law school. I'm going to graduate. I'm going to be a high powered attorney for a few years, like maybe 14. Then I'm going to like 15. Then I'm like going to go and like travel the world. And then I'm going to come back and be a law professor. And I had it all like figured out. And so I went to college and got like a business degree. And then I was like, I'm going to do like business, commercial litigation, like mergers and acquisitions. And I'm going to work at a big firm and do all these crazy, crazy things. And obviously sitting here with you all telling you that like spent a big part of that time as a prosecutor. And now I like, I'm also in politics. Everything's going exactly as planned. And I'm obviously like, and I'm getting up to that, like almost 15 years of law practice. So I'm really on track for exactly what I had planned as, you know, a middle school, high schooler. And I think my biggest piece of advice is wherever that path takes you, because I had not intended on being a prosecutor. I had not intended on being in politics and like running for office. There were so many things that happened along the way to where this big grand plan of like how I was going to be this big fancy corporate attorney took me down different paths that in those times, you know, you feel like, oh, I'm not doing this right. I'm not following what I thought I was going to do. Or you get an idea in your head about what a lawyer is supposed to be like or what's going to make you happy. Mm-hmm. And I think the beautiful part about a law degree and or being a lawyer is that there's so many different things that you can do and so many different opportunities that are going to present themselves to you that you really have to just like trust that journey. I went to the DA's office thinking I'm going to get a little bit of trial experience. The economy was kind of terrible. It was hard to find a job. You'll get some trial experience and then I'm going to go, you know, do this big firm work. And I ended up staying for a very long time because I loved that job. Mm-hmm. And so I think you have to be open to those opportunities. And I am a big advocate of if there's an internship that like looks interesting, it doesn't have to define your future. It can just be like an experience that can help you make an informed decision.
For sure. I love that.
Yeah. And if at some point you get to this thing where you're like, this thing I wanted to do is not what I think is going to make me happy, like try the thing that you think is going to make you happy, because you're going to have so many skills from that background, whether you're pre-law and then go into something else, or you get into law school and then you leave and do something else, or you graduate and do something that's different. There's so many places that that can take you. And I think you just have to be open, and you have to let that journey and that process happen and find what makes you want to get out of bed in the morning and like do the things.
Totally. For and there's so many carryover skills. I feel like people like don't realize, like to your point about like, you don't have to be set in like one path, and like not every internship has to be like, this defines you. It's like, there could be like one internship where maybe it wasn't for you, but there's 10 skills you learn that apply to the thing that you do like and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So being able to like be a little bit, you know, outside the box of how that rolls.
Yeah. So I don't know any like one who's done like any interview ever, whoever it is, whether it's like an actor or a lawyer or a politician, like who says, oh yeah, like this is exactly how I saw it going. It's like always like there's always just life brings you down different paths. And I think that's such good advice, is to just kind of like go with the flow of that. So I love that. Well, to wrap up, I want to make sure everyone knows like how they can continue to stay in tune with what's going on in Nevada, because it's going to be such a crucial, crucial state this election and beyond. So what are your recs in terms of like really making sure people can stay in tune with Nevada happenings politically?
Yeah. So we're going to be, I think, probably a lot in the nation's eye, because we are a swing state. We have a very competitive U.S. Senate race on our hands. We have competitive House races. And so while we're not a big state when it comes to, we have four congressional representatives. So, you know, it's not as robust as some other states like California and New York, where you have so many more, but they're important seats, and they're always going to be a little tough because, again, we're a very purple place. Yeah. And so I would definitely pay attention, because I think what happens in these Nevada elections, especially with the U.S. Senate and certainly some of our down ballot races. I mean, I'm obviously keeping a big eye on the state Senate, but what happens in Nevada is going to affect the nation as a whole. Whether you have a majority Democrat or Republican in Congress, if they can flip seats in Nevada, that changes the makeup of the House of Representatives. If we lose a Senate seat, that changes the makeup of the United States Senate. And these are going to be really tough, really crazy races. So I would say to anybody who is interested in nationwide politics as a whole, Nevada is going to be a microcosm of that. So if you are, you know, if you're interested and you're wondering what's going on, like, like connect with the campaigns here, come and volunteer. And then, you know, we're going to, as soon as the election is over, 2 months later, we're in full legislative mode. So we're going to be going into a second term governor, who second session governor, who's coming, who's in his first term, who is a Republican. I'm hopeful we're successful in our races on the Senate side and certainly on the Assembly side to keep our majorities. And we're talking about really important topics, everything that you can imagine. It's happening here in Nevada. And so, you know, we have a legislative website. If you go to the Nevada legislature, you can watch all of our happenings in the state Senate, all of our meetings. Once February starts is when we begin, the first Monday in February. You can watch all of our hearings. You can follow kind of what we're up to there. And that's always a great place to get information about the state legislature.
We love to see it. We love all the variations of C-SPAN. So absolutely, could not recommend more. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been great, and we look forward to having you back.
No, thank you so much for having me.
Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.